Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Sound Health Option Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy, and Sherry Edwards is in the lab working on the portal, the new portal. Very cool interface, so we'll be able to do it all online. Mostly online. Let me take that back. Pretty much all of it online. So that's very exciting. It gives everybody access and makes it so we don't have to deal with the Mac versus Windows world. And it's great just to have all the information readily available. And I know that more things are being, more software packages are being added to the portal, and there will be classes on that. So watch the Sound Health Options page. Today we're going to have a great show with Chuck Ehrlich, author of Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide, which sounds like it's a small niche show, in the sense that it is in the sense that lipedema is more of a genetic preclusion, but lymphedema is a condition that any number of people can have. So it's something to really, there's a lot of information in here. Before I start that, I want to remind everybody that to hear this show afterwards, the Sunday shows are going to mostly be only Blog Talk Radio now, so audio only shows. And you can always find the replay about 15 to 20 minutes after the show by going to soundhealthoptions.com and then clicking on the radio tab and then clicking on the Blog Talk Radio tab, and down there on the right-hand side or at the bottom is the Blog Talk player, which has the last five shows. So you'll be able to find this show there about 15 minutes afterwards. And also you can go to iTunes and search for Sherry Edwards in the podcast section, in the audio section, and find I think we're up to 490 shows, or pretty close. And or if you prefer another kind of podcast aggregator, which is my preference, you can go find, I would say one of my favorites is Stitcher, because it's cross-platform, and you can also use it on any of your computers or tablets to listen to things, and it remembers where you were and starts off right where you were, no matter what you're listening to. And again, you can go to Stitcher.com, get it onto your device, and then search for Sherry Edwards and see a boatload of shows there. There are others, Pocket Cast, Dog Catcher, to name a cute one. But, you know, that way you can have the shows available whenever you want. You can download them, listen to them again. And this is one of those shows that has so much information in it, I suspect that there will be people who are going to want to listen to this or send this to their friends, which is really easy with something like Stitcher. As many as 10 million Americans have lymphedema, and the numbers are growing every year. You may be at risk for lymphedema if you have chronic venous insufficiency, other venous disorders, heart disease, obesity, a cancer diagnosis, especially breast cancer, reproductive system cancers, or melanoma, or a family history of lymphedema or swollen legs. Eating wisely and maintaining a healthy body weight can help reduce your risk of developing lymphedema symptoms. Chuck Ehrlich founded LymphNotes.com in 2003 to provide online information and support for people with lymphedema, along with a family member with lymphedema. Chuck is lead author of Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide. This guide includes all the information you need for changing your eating patterns, including ways to increase your motivation and to build support for changing your eating style, meal plans and recipes for recommended foods, a shopping guide, cooking tips, suggestions for eating away from home, and much more. It also includes detailed information on lymphedema and lipedema, including risk factors, signs and symptoms, treatment, other healthcare considerations, and over 40 photographs showing stages of each condition. Chuck joins us to talk about his research in lymphedema and lipedema, nutrition guide, foods, vitamins, minerals, and supplements.
Chuck, I have to start by asking why your focus with your background, why your focus on lymphedema and lipedema?
My focus on lymphedema started many years ago because I have a family member with the condition, and at the time there was very little information available online, so we started a website, we started doing the research, that developed into a series of books on lymphedema, and as we got into that, I got more interested in the nutrition aspects and seeing the connections there that other people were not seeing, and so that led me to start talking at professional meetings about nutrition and lymphedema. And out of that, I developed a working group to do, actually with the plan of organizing a lipedema diet study. And we had weekly phone calls for about a year and realized that we didn't have enough physiological information on lipedema to do a diet study. We needed to do a physiological study. But we also collected a huge amount of wisdom and insight into nutrition for both conditions, and that led to the Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide.
And for the audience, well, and for our own edification, what are lipedema and lymphedema?
Okay, we'll do lipedema first. It's not about fat lips. It is both a form of lymphedema and a fat disorder that leads to abnormal fat, starting usually on the hips and buttocks and the legs, can spread to other body parts. The fat starts out being very smooth and soft and gradually changes in texture and becomes lumpier and larger as the condition progresses. And the fat is painful, which is the other name for the condition, is painful fat condition. So that's lipedema. Lymphedema is about edema or swelling caused by issues with the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system is sort of the second circulatory system that drains waste from all of the tissues and provides a number of other important functions in fat metabolism and the immune system. And when there are issues with this system where it gets damaged, you get fluid accumulation, and the fluid accumulation leads to fat buildup. So this is another progressive condition frequently seen in people who've been treated for cancer or other medical conditions. And again, it's a progressive condition.
And in the cancer situations, is that partially because either there's a possible removal of some lymph nodes and or is radiation therapy damaging to the lymphs?
There's several things that happen in the cancer situation. Cancer damages the lymph nodes and damages the lymphatic system. Cancer treatment then will either biopsy or remove the lymph nodes to see whether cancer is spreading through the lymphatic system. And then if you have radiation or other treatment, that will further damage the lymphatics.
And I guess I have to back up for a moment and ask about the lymphatics themselves. Can you talk a bit about the physiology and the normal function of the lymphatics when it's healthy?
The lymphatics, they are in several places. And they're throughout the body, including they extend into the brain and into the eye, which is new research. And the lymphatic system develops in parallel with the blood circulatory system, but it's a one-way system. So it doesn't get pumped like the blood does by a central pump. It gets pumped by the contraction of the lymphatic vessels and the movements of the muscles surrounding the lymphatic vessels. And the lymphatics collect tissue waste or tissue fluid, and then when it's in the lymphatics, it's called lymph. and they remove all of this, and then goes through a series of progressively of lymph nodes where it's processed for the immune system, and then into larger vessels, and then it's returned into the blood circulatory system at the base of the neck. The other functions of the lymphatic system are that they're very involved in digestion, so that more than half of the lymphatics are in the gut, and they are involved in fat metabolism, particularly long-chain fatty acids are processed through the lymphatic system. And the lymphatics are part of the immune system. It's both immune surveillance and immune action to detect antigen or detect foreign and harmful things and to react to them. And when your lymphatic system is not working well, you are at greater risk for infection and other disease conditions.
Did you say more than half of the lymphs are in the gut?
More than half of the lymphatic system is the gut-associated lymphatic tissue. It's
wow.
In and around the, particularly around the small intestine. Because, you know, we eat foreign bodies. You know, the things we eat may be helpful, maybe not. And there's a lot of immune surveillance about what's in the gut and are we good with it. And long-chain fats are absorbed through the walls of the small intestine in structures called lymphatic villi and go through a separate set of lymphatic vessels and then from there into the thoracic duct and into the blood circulatory system. So that long-chain fats, which are the most common fats in the foods, are processed directly through the lymphatic system, and that's one of the functions of the system. It's one of the ways that you can overload the system is by eating larger quantities of long-chain fats.
I'm locked up for a moment because I want to ask one question, but I have to ask another first. So as I stand here, my heart's pumping, blood is circulating.
Right.
As I stand here, my lymphs are just doing nothing.
No. No, your lymphs are moving, they're twitching.
Okay.
They're collecting waste from, you know, from your skin, from around your body, other parts, moving it through progressively larger vessels into your solar plexus and the a structure called the cisterna cellae, where a number of the lymphatic trunks come together. And then there's a central thoracic duct that runs up through the chest and over to the left side of the base of the neck, where the main lymph drains into the blood circulatory system. So the contractions of the lymphatic vessels and the movements of the muscles and a few other things contribute to the lymph movement, the lymph pumping action.
So the lymphs, unlike the blood system, don't have a muscle moving them. It's really our bodily movement that is causing the lymphs to move. So even though I'm standing here, because I use a standing workstation, so even though I'm standing here just from the moving back and forth and the shifting of feet, my body in motion is helping the lymphatics move. Is that right?
That is correct. That is helping with it. Also, the lymphatic vessels are organized as a series of chambers, and there's smooth muscles in the wall of the vessel that contract and pump lymph from one chamber to the next. But this is small and this is delicate, and there are little one-way butterfly valves in there. And if the lymphatic vessel is overloaded, those valves don't close and the pumping action doesn't work.
And in your years of research on the lymphs, well, actually, this is a general question. It seems like the lymphs, I mean, we've always heard about lymphs. I studied massage therapy in the 70s and did it in the 80s. And I had lymph training, lymphatic drainage, massage training, and all that kind of action. And it seems to me that I've always been a fan of the lymphs, But the lymphs seem kind of like the forgotten, you know, uncle someplace. You know, they're in there, but you don't hear people talking about the lymphs very much, even though they're really critical to keeping the body clean and healthy. Why do you think that is?
I think, well, we've seen several things, because we've been doing this for more than a decade, and we're seeing a lot more attention to the lymphatics. We're seeing a lot more attention to lymphedema, and there's a lot more understanding, and there's more coming, because there's new research that shows that not only is the lymphatic system more pervasive than it was believed to be. It wasn't known until recently that there were lymphatic vessels in the brain, things like that. But also the role of inflammation and the role of lymphatics in so many medical conditions is really coming to light. And we have new research that shows that inflammation, endotoxins, interfere with the pumping action of the lymphatic system and cause lymphatic vessels to leak. And this is part of the mechanism by which inflammation causes damage that leads to many, many conditions, not just lymphedema, but also diabetes and heart disease and Alzheimer's and, you know, you name it, the list goes on forever.
I have a question from the audience about how does lymphedema and lipedema interact, or does one preclude the other? Do they always travel in pairs? That kind of thing.
Well, it's an interesting question, and it's let me back up a little bit. There are two forms of lymphedema. There is what's called primary lymphedema, that is a hereditary condition. And there is secondary lymphedema that is acquired, or usually from cancer treatment or other things that damage the lymphatic system. And lipedema is both a form of lymphedema and a fat disorder. The thinking used to be that lipedema caused lymphedema in the later stages, because as the lipedema developed, you would get visible swelling and clearly have lymphedema of usually the feet and legs. But in actuality, lipedema has lymphatic abnormalities in the very earliest stages, and these contribute to the development of lipedema in ways that we're working on understanding better. But you can also have you can also have lymphedema and lipedema. And we have a picture in our book of a woman who has the swelling of primary lymphedema in her ankle and the abnormal fat of lipedema in her upper body. Hmm. So she has both conditions.
We were talking a little bit before the show, and I just have to jump here, going from the more than half the lymphs are in the gut. So it seems to me that it's really important about what we put in there.
Yes.
And it has such an effect on the gut.
Right. and normally half of the lymph in the body is produced by the liver. Hmm. But when the liver is diseased, the lymph production from the liver goes up as much as 8 to 10 times normal. And this means that non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is very common in anyone who is obese, is a huge factor in contributing to lymphedema, because the increased lymph output from the liver is flooding the central lymphatic system.
This is a slight sidestep, but we're in the same theme. How do you feel the technological revolution in foods has affected the increase of these conditions? And I'm being kind of facetious, not really. I'm in a bad mood about this. When we started having the advent of corn, like high fructose corn syrup, a favorite of mine to really like want to punch and beat, or other, you know, very George Foreman in a ring with, you know, high fructose corn syrup. It's such a bad player. and other products like that. You know, these refined foods. I have a sneaking suspicion that my great grandparents didn't have as much of a problem with this as we do. Because
I think your suspicion is right. High fructose corn syrup is a bad player and is one of the major drivers of liver disease. Because fructose must go to the liver to be processed, and in situations where glucose and insulin levels are high, like if you've got a lot of other sugars around, the fructose gets converted to fat, to triglycerides, and stored in the liver. And so high fructose corn syrup drives non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Fatty liver disease drives lymphedema and all of these other things, as well as contributing to gut dysbiosis and other problems. Now, what is not in the book, but I will have posted online real soon now, is something about the role of maltodextrin and other food additives, because these turn out to have been introduced in the 50s and have a huge impact on gut dysbiosis and leaky gut, in that maltodextrin changes the mixture of bacteria in the gut, along with sugar and fat and the other things that are going on there, and contributes to leaky gut or increased intestinal permeability. This is why we recommend whole foods. It's recognizable foods that your grandparents might have made in themselves that don't contain all of these additives. These additives change the bacteria. They change the E. coli into adhesive, invasive E. coli that are able to colonize the wall of the small intestine, enter into the bloodstream, enter into the macrophages. All of this increases inflammation because all of the gram-negative bacteria shed endotoxins, and endotoxins are the primary driver of inflammation. Plus, when the adhesive invasive E. coli get in there, they can spread through the blood system by actually taking up housekeeping within macrophages and then causing other disease and getting into other organ systems.
Dysbiosis. Explain dysbiosis, if you would, please.
Okay. Gut dysbiosis is a change in the mix of microbes in the gut, and it exists as a continuum. So in the mild forms of dysbiosis, you basically don't have any symptoms of gastrointestinal issues. Things seem to be okay. In the more extreme forms of dysbiosis are associated with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease and conditions like that. And there are several changes that happen in the mix of bacteria in the gut. There is an increase in gram-negative bacteria, such as E. coli. There is a decrease in gram-positive bacteria, which have health benefits. There is a decrease in overall diversity of the gut microbes, the number of different varieties that you have. And the mucus layer that protects the lining of the small intestine is damaged and depleted, which allows the bacteria to adhere to it and enter and increases the intestinal permeability. And these changes are driven by combinations of fat, sugar, and amplified by maltodextrin and the other food additives. They result in increased inflammation. They result in from the endotoxins which are shed from the outer shell of the gram-negative bacteria and other health-affecting changes.
I want to change the direction slightly. I'm seeing so many children that are overweight, and they seem kind of puffy, like the Pillsbury Doughboy. Is this part of lymphedema in these youngsters? is that seems to be affecting their immune system. Can you talk about that?
Well, gut dysbiosis can happen in childhood and infancy, and you can even have pediatric Crohn's disease in the advanced stages of it, because maltodextrin and things are in infant formulas, and sugar and the sugar starts early, and a lot of it's high fructose corn syrup. I can't really speak to what you're seeing in these children. It could be some lymphatic swelling. Clearly, there's an epidemic of childhood obesity, and childhood obesity is accompanied by fatty liver disease, so this is all part of it, and none of it bodes well for the overall health of these children.
So you're suggesting the radical idea of eating a whole natural foods diet. Is that, I'm not saying it's a simple thing, but I mean, in a certain way, that's really what your book advocates for is, you know, avoid fructose, corn syrup in all its forms, and kick
right.
it to the curb. Avoid things that exacerbate the fatty liver. Eat a healthy diet, a clean,
right.
you know, sort of in my realm, I would say, don't eat anything out of a box. is my, you know, attitude to people.
Yeah, that's true. And we're minimizing grains, particularly grains containing gluten, because gluten is another factor in increased intestinal permeability, and many people are sensitive to it. And it raises the blood sugar very quickly, and it does other things. So.
Yeah. We've interviewed both William Davis on Wheat Belly, and also a series of interviews with Stephanie Seneff talking about her research on gluten, and also the further exacerbation of the gluten issue by spraying with glyphosate pre-harvest and just in general. Her research is looking at that it's, you know, gluten's an issue unto itself.
Yes. And the gut dysbiosis and the maltodextrin all amplify the gluten issue. And many of the food sensitivities, if people are sensitive to FODMAPs, these are certain types of foods, gluten amplifies that sensitivity. So this all plays in together. It all results in gut dysbiosis and increased intestinal permeability. So you want to stop fueling that and eat things that fight it. So that we're talking about omega-3s and fermented foods and inulin fiber and things that help to promote a healthy mix of gut bacteria and heal the lining of the intestine.
You've spoken about gut permeability. Does any of this deal with the permeability of the brain and the increase in Lewy proteins that we're seeing?
Probably. Clearly, inflammation is a factor in that. And the lymphatic system probably plays a role in that, because the lymphatic system is responsible for garbage collection from the brain. And when you have a decrease in lymphatic system function, that's going to affect that.
Is a lot of this in your book?
A lot of this is in the book. Some of it, the research on maltodextrin, I don't have posted yet. That's what I'm working on now. So that will be on the website, hopefully real soon now. I have posted about the endotoxins interfering with the pumping action of the lymphatic system. That's also something that came out after we had the book finished.
We should tell people it's Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutritional Guide, Foods, Vitamins, Minerals, and Supplements. There is a Kindle edition. I love the Kindle editions because you can look up anything quickly in there. It has 4.5 stars, which is great. 42 wonderful customer reviews. Does this teach people how to look at their own situation and move toward better health?
That's what we're trying to do. And a lot of what we're trying to help people with is finding out what works for them. So it's not like there's a one-size-fits-all solution, but we want people to find things that will help them make improvements. And we talk about this as a nutrition guide. It's not a diet book. We want you to help. We want to help you make improvements in what you eat that you can continue to follow for the rest of your life. Because if you want to gain weight, the best way to gain weight is to go on a diet and then go off of it. Because after you've lost a little weight on a diet, it will come back with a vengeance and you will end up heavier than you were before. So this is a lifetime program of eating healthy to support not only improving lymphedema and lipedema, but also other health conditions.
So I have a slight sideways question. It does have to do with, I'm somewhat fixated on the half of the lymphs are in the gut. I'm familiar with the lymph system, but I was just not consciously aware of the, you know, about half around the gut. So back to that for a moment in the amazing technological revolution in foods. So beef, and I drop the mic and walk away. No, beef, it used to be grass fed and now we're giving, it's fed all this other insert expletive of your choice that we shouldn't be eating. And yet, I don't know how many years ago it was that 1 million were served or 10 million McDonald's burgers were served. And I'm not casting direct aspersions to McDonald's. Maybe. I'm not sure. But just in general, you know, there's a lot of beef eaten that is not only does it have all sorts of hormones and antibiotics and all sorts of other bad players for our gut, it also is being fed all of this product that you're telling us we shouldn't be eating. So therefore, why would we want to eat that? I don't know. I'm trying to make a question in there, but I'm too in a bad mood about it.
We are not advocating for eating beef. It's a, you know, like everything else, it's up to you. If you are going to eat ground beef, I would suggest that you either grind it yourself or know who grinds it so that you minimize the amount of other things that are in it. Beef is, you know, beef and other, is several things have happened in the meat supply. One is, if you go back far enough, even in the United States, we ate many different kinds of meat. And right now it's down to 3 or 4 that are factory produced. The kinds of fats in the meats have shifted from being omega-3 fats, which are anti-inflammatory, to omega-6 fats, which are pro-inflammatory. And this is because the beef is the meats are raised on corn and soy and the grains that contain these fats rather than grass. Much of the beef, particularly ground beef, contains significant quantities of E. coli. And the E. coli are killed by cooking. So you don't want to eat it raw unless you really take care in the way you prepare it and grind it yourself. And there are ways you can do it to protect yourself. But after the E. coli are killed, the endotoxins, which are these tough little structures that form the outer shell of the bacteria, remain. And endotoxins are not alive, but they're very stable. They can survive boiling for 30 minutes, and they're still highly irritating and highly inflammatory. Mm. So you get endotoxins in foods that have contained gram-negative bacteria, Or you can grow your own if you have overgrowth of E. coli and other gram-negative bacteria in the small intestine. And most people do a combination of both.
Can't we get endotoxins environment? Well, or maybe they're not endotoxins, or I might environmental toxins as well. I mean, to pile into our toxic load, referring back to my grandparents, that was pre, well, my great grandparents, that was pre, you know, I had to go a little further back. As a kid, I remember driving through the Salinas Valley, that would be in the goodness 60s, to visit my grandparents up in the now called the Silicon Valley. And as a kid, it was fun to stick your head out of the car and be dusted by the crop dusters who are flying over the roads, not knowing that you're being sprayed by DDT at the time. So my great grandparents never had any of that. They didn't have the kind of toxic load just environmentally that we have now. Doesn't that add to this whole mix of what our lymphs and our bodies are trying to process in terms of toxic load?
Yeah, yes, it does. It's all additive and it's all cumulative. And you want to try and do the best you can. You know, you can't live in a bubble and eat only things that you've grown within your own little bubble. That interferes with the rest of your lifestyle for most people. But you want to do the best you can. Try and avoid as many toxics as possible.
Are there some, not really definitions, but symptoms like of lymph as how it affects the vascular system? We've had a group of diabetics come in, and most of them have the lower legs swollen, their ankles swollen, but some of them are having muscle spasms, but they seem like vascular spasms. Is this lymph related too?
I'm not really qualified to answer that question. I'm not really. Are we talking about issues in the particularly in the legs and venous insufficiency?
Yes, that seems to be what's causing it. And things like one lady used pickle juice and another one used dried magnesium. Another one just drank water and it helped. So we didn't really know how to help her.
Okay. Well, swelling of the feet and legs is very common in older people. It's usually a mix of lymphedema and venous insufficiency, sometimes called phlebolymphedema. Sometimes you'll have the escaping blood leading to the brown hemosiderin stains, and the diet, the nutrition that we recommend will help improve this. And and the swollen areas, particularly around the feet and ankles, are very prone to infection and very difficult to heal. In order to heal an ulcer on an area like this, you must reduce the swelling from the lymphedema, because the lymphedema it interferes with healing. Magnesium will help, and what can be very good for people with this sort of condition is to soak their feet in water with Epsom salts. It helps both with magnesium levels, because the magnesium is absorbed through the skin, and it helps to improve the skin and kill surface infections. Pickle juice, not sure. It's going to be, you know, it will have some short chain fatty acids in it. It's going to have a significant amount of salt. You want real pickles, not vinegar pickles. They've got to be fermented. They've got to be sold refrigerated. If it doesn't spoil, you probably shouldn't eat it. And these will have healthy bacteria that will help. In general, you don't want huge quantities of salt. Salt gets absorbed into the skin and interferes with lymphatic function.
Is this something your book addresses, or should they go to a doctor, an individual who specializes in this? Do you have a list and a group of doctors that people could be referred to?
These are things that my book addresses, and our book and the nutrition that we recommend will help. If someone has swollen legs like this and they have a wound or an ulcer, they need to seek a wound care specialist or a because they will be able to help reduce the swelling in order to get the wound to heal. And the wound care specialists have become much more common now because these conditions have become more common, and they are very knowledgeable about lymphedema and bringing the swelling down.
Odd question that I thought about before the show, trampolines, these little jiggle machines, are those recommended for somebody who has these conditions?
There are people who recommend trampolines for these conditions. It's a mixed bag. It's any motion will help, frankly, and some of the jiggle machines and the will help. However, many people who have lymphedema are not safe on a trampoline, and you've got to balance this out. You've got to balance out what you can do without putting yourself at risk. You do want to keep moving, and that's very important, but it's got to be in ways that are safe for you, and you're not going to risk, you know, breaking one of these limbs or something. That's really going to be bad.
Does that mean that we can go old school and get something like a rebounder? Because they make rebounders. They made rebounders that were just single little mini trampolines. Now they make them with handles so that you could actually stand and hold onto the handle. And you don't really need to get like major elevation. You really just need to bounce gently up and down. Is that true?
Well, you really need to keep moving.
Okay.
And walking is really good. Walking activates a whole series of muscle pumps and things in the feet and legs. And you need to do what you can do. And, you know, very often people are not only going to have swelling in the legs, they're also going to have arthritis because of both the inflammation and the fluid buildup, and everything has damaged the joints. And so they've got to be within their comfort range of what they can do and do safely, but also to keep moving. So even what you're doing with the standing desk helps, because as you're standing, you're moving, you're using the muscles in your legs, you're getting more muscle action than if you were sitting. And so any movement is good. Long periods of inactivity trigger things in the body that lead to fat buildup. I think you're wounded and you need to preserve resources.
Mm-hmm. And I have another bumper sticker, which leads me into another question is, the bumper sticker is, if it doesn't spoil, you probably shouldn't eat it. Because to me, what that means is, if it doesn't spoil, it doesn't have a vitality or a life to it. And I don't mean you have to, like, you know, grab a chicken and eat it. You want it to be somewhat, have bacteria take action on it, because it still has vitality. And to me, that indicates that it's not filled with some creepy preservative. Classic of the, you buy the burger at the place of your choice, with Arches maybe, and put it on the shelf, and then you come back in a year and it still looks like it did. That scares me. I'm looking for foods that are active and alive and vital, meaning, you know, fermented foods and things that can go bad because they haven't been pasteurized or killed. Am I misreading something there? Do I have a wrong direction?
No, that's right. You want recognizable ingredients, and things that have not been treated. And particularly, we're talking about pickles, and there are two classes of pickles. There's what's called vinegar pickles, that you'll find on the shelf in the grocery store, and these are things that have been put into vinegar and vinegar brine and they sit there and they don't have live bacteria in them, or they and then there are the actual fermented pickles that you find in the refrigerated case, and this and the same for sauerkraut and other things. And these have live bacteria in them and will provide some health benefits. And other foods that are preserved will not only have whatever chemicals are used for preserving them, but they'll also have other additives to make them palatable and tasty and addictive. You know, the salt and the sugar, the maltodextrin, and the other food additives. We've got a whole list in one of the appendices of the book of food ingredients that you want to avoid, including all of the, literally, it's more than 27 names for high fructose corn syrup and other undesirable ingredients. So you want to look for things that are recognizable foods, ideally fresh or minimally processed.
And as I recall, you're a fan of, you know, in the book you talk about, you know, real whole foods. I can't remember if I heard or read you're a fan of cruciferous vegetables. Why is that?
Cruciferous vegetables are what we call fighting foods. They contain chemicals that help to fight cancer and some of the abnormal biological signaling and other things. If they may taste a little bitter, they may be hard for young children to eat because young children are more sensitive to these tastes, but they have health benefits, and you want a variety of vegetables in order to increase the diversity of the microbes in your gut. And then the other food that we recommend, which is in terms of fermented foods, is kefir and yogurt, particularly unsweetened organic kefir and yogurt, because these have beneficial bacteria in them, and you can get significant quantities of beneficial bacteria from eating these. We recommend basically 4 ounces twice a day to help reestablish and maintain the healthy bacteria.
And do you find that as people are going through this, do you recommend just stopping all of the boxed and, you know, bad foods and all that kind of stuff, and really going full on to, well, preferably an organic diet, because that's the least, well, that's the best. Or do you suggest tapering? I mean, can people, have you seen in your research looking at people who've, you know, had an issue, will they suddenly change everything that they have a detox or a Herxheimer reaction, or do you just like, let's just do this?
What we recommend is that you do what you can do. And if you can make incremental changes, if you can cut out the sugar sweetened beverages, if you can cut out the diet drinks, if you can start by changing breakfast and make gradual changes, if that works for you, you will get benefit from it. If you can make a total change and change everything all at once, that's wonderful. But don't let the difficulty or the challenge of making a total change stop you from making things that will benefit you. So that don't, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. This is a major change for many people, and it does mean that you have to shop differently, that you may not have been cooking before, you may have to cook. There may be a lot of skills issues. It may take time, but start by making changes. Start with breakfast, and do what you can do, and you will see benefit from each stage of this. You may go through withdrawal from sugar. Sugar is addictive, but you will feel better after you get over that initial period.
There can be like you say, that struggle period, or, you know, where your body's going, no, I really liked that. Sugar was great. But then once you get to the other side, there's that other spiral of feeling better and better and better. Where, as you say, you take a step and then you kind of go, oh, I don't know, a little, and then suddenly one day, you know, in a month, you forget that you used to really want those Frosted Flakes first thing in the morning. Because you're finding that, you know, whole grain oatmeal feels really good in your body.
And your body feels really good for the rest of the day, because the you know, part of what happens with the Frosted Flakes is you'll feel really good for a little while. And then after a while, you're not going to feel so good. You're going to crave more sugar. And this is the roller coaster that you get onto with these foods, and you can get off that roller coaster and feel consistently good and have more energy and improve your health.
As I said, somewhere in there, a radical idea, eat real food. If it doesn't, what did I say? If it doesn't spoil you, probably shouldn't eat it. I'm going to stick with that. I really feel that's such a truth. I'm surprised to find that we're wrapping up toward the end of our time with you. How do people, besides getting this great book, I'm thinking that this could be a great gift for people now, because even though this title seems a little scary, if you don't know about lymphedema and lipedema, but I mean, the overall foundation of your book is it has a lot of great information about nutrition, eating, what not to eat, what you want to eat, with, you know, helpful guides and sort of like how-tos in a certain, you know, in a certain way, recipes and, you know, like, here's how you can do this. But it has a lot of really wonderful information. And again, as Sherry said, it's so great that it's in a Kindle version, because people can get it now. As they're listening to this, they can go to Amazon, get it now. Now, really, not kidding, now. So do you do online seminars? Or do you do other educational work in this arena? Or where do you want people to go to get your information? Any of that?
Okay. What we do is we speak at professional meetings. We were invited to speak at the National Lymphedema Network meeting for people who treat lymphedema in Dallas last September. We'll be speaking at the Fat Disorders Research Conference that's coming up in April in Salt Lake City. We're doing some other meetings of that sort. We have the information on the Lymph Notes website. That's lymphnotes.com. That has both the book information and the information about events that we're doing. We're also on Facebook. And we may start to do some other online things, but there's nothing that's set up right now.
Okay. And for listeners, all the links that Chuck just mentioned will be in the show notes for the Facebook, for the Amazon, you know, link to the book, as well as the link to his really a great resource, as well as the lymphnotes.com. So those links will be all in the show notes for you to be able to find it. And I'll say now that I think it'd be great for, as you come out with more material on the maltodextrin and any other additive you want to talk about, please let us know and we'll have you back and talk about that, because additives are, they're additives. I don't know how to say that any better. They're additives. They're not in there. They don't grow in them.
Your soapbox is showing through.
Sorry, I know. I tried to go to a close and then it happens. I'm sorry.
Such a big, big topic, and we've only skimmed the surface here. We really recommend that people go look at your book and look at your website. I'm looking at the contents of the book, and it is just absolutely chock full of information that our audience needs. They're all interested in better health, and this is just a tremendous guideline for this topic.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, this is for the whole family. This is not just for those who may have lymphedema or be at risk for lymphedema. And if you are at risk for lymphedema, if you've had any cancer treatment or bypass surgery, or you're obese or have other risk factors, improving what you eat is one of the most important things you can do to reduce your risk. And this diet works for the whole family.
We love what you're doing, and yeah. We certainly look forward to you bringing more information and coming back. Any last words, Richard? This has been very enlightening. It's been exciting to me because it's a topic I don't know much about, and I ordered the book while we were talking, so I'm going to go grab my Kindle.
That was really a great, Chuck. I want to jump back on my soapbox, but I won't. Additives! I can't help it. That was really excellent. Definitely, we will have you back for further conversations about other additives, as well as what you're continuing to research on. Thanks so much. And everybody have a great rest of the week.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Take.
All right. Chuck Ehrlich. Boy, it's a lot of information. As I said, you can find the replay available in about 15 or 20 minutes at soundhealthoptions.com. Click on the radio tab, then click on Blog Talk Radio, and it'll be in the player there. Or go to iTunes or the podcast aggregator of your choice and search for Sherry Edwards. And those usually take about an hour or so before the show up. And I cannot highly recommend enough his site, lymphnotes.com, which is filled with information. Resources and who some of the other researchers on the book is. And they also have a Facebook page, which I'll put in the show notes, which is facebook.com lymphedema and lipedema nutrition guide. And it's really good information in general because it's healthy to keep the lymphs happy and neutrified because, as he said, they do a lot. All right, everybody, have a great rest of the day, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Bye-bye.